This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Malcolm Rogers, director of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, has announced that he will step down after leading the institution for close to 20 years. He'll stay on the job until the museum names a new director, which will take another year or so. That means in May, Rogers will become the longest-serving director in the MFA's 144-year history. Earlier today, we went over to the MFA to talk to Malcolm Rogers about the past two decades. Under his leadership, the museum grew dramatically with new and renovated galleries. It attracted many more visitors, and its endowment tripled. He also oversaw the completion of the MFA's Art of the Americas wing. Given all that, we asked Malcolm Rogers what he's most proud of.
I think, above all, I'm proud of moving the museum a little in public perceptions, that it's now seen as a much more welcoming place, a livelier place, a place where the community can gather. And it's seen as a community resource. That's absolutely vital for me.
So give us a sense of what the MFA was like when you arrived in 1994. I mean, there were deficits. There was thought to be a lack of leadership. Attendance was down. How big a hill did you view this to climb?
It was quite a big hill, but then yeah. I came here for a challenge. You know, so much of what you said can be summed up in the fact that the front entrance, the main entrance of the museum, was closed. I thought practically that didn't make sense, and symbolically it was a huge negative. It just said, the museum is suffering. Well, you know, people want to hear that the museum is positive and moving ahead. So subtly we managed to change the tone. We opened the door, we opened 7 days a week, children became free. All those things kind of said, this is a different world now. You know, we are for all people, and we're to lift the spirits and educate as many people as possible.
Yeah. But what prevented it from doing that in the old days? I mean, what sort of forces were at play that made it less accessible?
I believe the programming of the museum was too narrow. It didn't address the preoccupations of a current generation. I believe there was a perception, perhaps partly because of the history in the city and of the politics of the city, that this place was an elitist place. And that's the kind of thing that I've been working to dispel. Truly, we are for all, and it's excellence for all.
It's interesting because, as you know, some of your exhibitions were controversial, like the 1996 retrospective of Herbert's fashion photography, right? Created a lot of stir, or the exhibit of Ralph Lauren's cars, for example. They drew lots of people, sort of blockbuster exhibits, but people said, this isn't fine arts, this doesn't belong here. What's the best argument that it did?
Well, for a start, if you take the instance of cars, I, having created that exhibition, will never look at a car the same way again. I'm more conscious of design, of materials, of proportion, all those things. And the point of museums, when they were founded in the 19th century, was to educate people's eyes, to look for beauty in areas that you took for granted. And I feel I've been vindicated. I think we showed great foresight, because if you think about it, Herbert's, the Getty Museum a few years ago, acquired an archive of his work and put on an exhibition there, and that's one of the most traditional museums in the world. And Ralph Lauren's cars have been exhibited at the Louvre in Paris. What does that tell you? I think we did pretty well.
You're in pretty good
in
company.
Boston.
Well, speaking of that, we're standing in this lovely exhibit of Impressionism called Boston Loves Impressionism.
Yeah.
And this was a crowdsourced exhibit. And I understand it came from you. It was your idea. So again, one might say, really, we're going to let the public decide what gets exhibited here?
Well, sometimes I think it's a good idea, a good way to engage people. And very interestingly, a number of people have said to me who voted, this tells me how difficult a curator's job is. How do you choose the art? So it's truly instructive in that way. However, there's another side to these things. Everything we hear from our public says that when people come to the museum now, they want not just an experience of art, in other words, standing in front of a painting and looking at it. They want an art experience, if that makes sense. They want to be able to personalize the art, to relate to it. It might be a learning experience. It might be a photo on your iPhone that you send to your friends. It might be, as we did in an exhibition recently called Hippie Chic, that you choose a favorite record to play on a jukebox from the Hippie Chic period. And there you had mothers and daughters, fathers and daughters, dancing to the music when those parents were crazy hippies in the 60s. That seems to me an art experience. And then when you looked at the way the objects in the exhibition were interpreted, they were masterpieces of curatorial interpretation.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned, I was struck by the fact that you mentioned art and an iPhone and so on and so forth. It just occurs to me that your tenure really paralleled a time in American sort of cultural society of this explosive change in the way we get information, in the way we look at art, television, programming, whatever it is. So that must have really changed the way you thought about how to keep a major fine arts museum relevant.
Is the great challenge and the great opportunity of this generation is accessibility. Mm-hmm. And now our collections are accessible to people around the world instantly. And things that we don't have an opportunity to show on our walls, but in our storerooms, on the internet, you can see them.
Mm. I want to ask you, if I could, just what it was like to come to Boston 20 years ago. You came from London. This city is sometimes known for, once upon a time, maybe less so today, but once upon a time it was known for being a little insulated. Mm-hmm. Did you have to overcome something? Did you have to sort of earn people's trust? What was it like coming in as an outsider?
Well, I never felt an outsider, really. I just felt, probably I was rather innocent, that I just, you know, got off the plane and started work in a new city, thinking I was the luckiest person to have this fabulous institution to lead where there was work to be done. The key thing for me was the job.
Mm.
The biggest cultural shock, one was the whole volunteer culture here, that people really volunteer in the museum, they consider the museum theirs. And the other was the incredible philanthropic culture here. Americans, whatever their income, tend to be very, very generous to the great public institutions.
And that was really something that you didn't see in Europe to the same extent.
In Europe, in those days, it was always the case that people visited a museum and knew the government would look after it. It would always be there. So there wasn't that kind of sense of ownership. When I first came, I always remember if I went to talk to a group, people would say, "This is our director," or "This is the director of our museum." It's quite different.
Well, let me ask you the very sort of basic question of, with regard to this rather dramatic news of your departure. Why? Why are you moving on now?
Well, you know, I'm 65. In 15 years, I'll be 80. And I've been here 20 years, and it's probably good for a new set of eyes to look at the museum. But it's also the case that I have to look at the next phase in my career. When you've done something for 20 years, there are things you love, and there are things you've done for 20 times and you don't love, you know? So it's, I think, the right time in a number of ways.
I heard that when you announced to the board of directors yesterday your decision to move on, you got a standing ovation. There were some tears. It must have made you feel pretty good.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
I'm very fond of this place, and it's nice to know it's fond of me.
Right, I can understand that. I want to ask you about this, what you just said about a pair of fresh eyes could be beneficial for the museum. What do you think the museum needs? You know, what do you see? What would you like to see happen to this museum in the next 20 years?
Well, you're asking me to be the fresh eyes. Of course, I can see things ahead that I'd like to do, like to change and so on. But really, you need that new intelligence to perhaps do something slightly different. Build on what I've done, but do something slightly different.
Well, then let me ask the question this way. What is perhaps undone that you hope gets done?
Well, certainly on my list is to carry on with the renovations of galleries in the museum. You know, we have a number of galleries that haven't been renovated for many years, so the fundraising for those has to be done, and I'd love to see those renovations happen. I'd love to see the whole campus of the museum school, and the Forsyth building, which we bought a few years ago. Love to see all those brought into a fantastically diverse but functional and efficient campus for the museum.
Finally, Malcolm Rogers, you mentioned you're 65 years young. So what's next? What are you going to do in this next?
I'm not structuring my next phase yet. I'm going to see what offers itself. I certainly want to travel, read, and listen to music, but I also hope to keep active intellectually as well.
Well, it sounds like a great idea and a great plan. And again, congratulations on 20 great years here at the MFA.
Thank you very much.
And that's Malcolm Rogers, Director of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. Thank you again for joining us, and good luck.
It's a pleasure.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, the Concord Free Press gives its books away for free. We'll talk with a founder and editor-in-chief about generosity-based publishing and what exactly that is. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.